He didn't just drag me out of my home and to this stupid hotel.
So you're not going to talk to me? Steve asks.
I stare straight ahead. I'm not making chit-chat with this guy. He thinks he can waltz into my life after 17 years and order me around? Welcome to parenthood, Steve. You're in for a bumpy ride.
Ella, you can't honestly believe I'd allow you to continue living with the royals, with your boyfriend down the hall.
It's probably childish, but I continue to give Steve the silent treatment. Besides, if I open my mouth, something bad's gonna come out. Such as, where the hell were you when my mom was dying of cancer? Oh, that's right, you were hang gliding with your evil wife. He sighs, and we finish the ride up to the penthouse in silence. The doors open into a wide hallway. Steve leads me down the hall, rolling my suitcase behind him. He presses the keycard against the door at the end of the hall. Inside, I find a living room, a dining room, and a set of stairs. I've spent my share of time in crappy, low-budget hotel rooms, and the stairs have never been inside a room before. I try not to gawk, but it's hard. Steve picks up a leather pad from the table.
Before I show you your room, why don't you have a look? We'll order room service while you get settled.
We just ate an hour ago, I remind him in disbelief. He shrugs.
I'm hungry again. Should I order a salad for you, Dinah?
He yells. Dinah appears at the top of the stairs. That'd be fine.
Why don't you call this in while I show Ella around?
He waves the menu and then sets it back on the table. Without waiting for an answer, he places a hand on my back and pushes me forward.
I'll take the T-bone. Rare, please.
Past the dining room is another door. Steve opens it and gestures for me to come inside.
This is your room. It has an exterior door that leads to the hall. You'll need your key to get up to this floor.
He holds out a plastic card, which I reluctantly pocket.
There's daily maid service and 24-hour room service. Feel free to order whatever you like. I can afford it.
He winks. I'm too busy looking around to respond.
Do you want someone up here to unpack for you? He continues. Dinah can help you if you'd like.
Dinah would probably rather drink a bottle of bleach than help me. I muster up a, no thank you, which generates another big smile from Steve. He apparently thinks we're getting along swimmingly. I'm wondering if I can get the front desk to create a new keycard for Reed. Exterior door? Maybe I won't hate it here.
All right. If you need anything, just holler. We're in tight quarters here, I know, but it'll only be a couple of weeks.
He taps the top of the suitcase before leaving. Tight quarters. Granted, the room is smaller than my bedroom at the Royals, but it's still larger than any place I've ever lived before. Definitely larger than any hotel room I've ever stayed in. I didn't even realize they made hotel rooms this large. Ignoring my suitcase, I throw myself on the bed and text Reed. I have an exterior door. He texts back immediately.
I'm on my way.
I wish.
I can be.
Steve would lose it.
Don't know what's up his ass. He's had more women than a rock star.
That's a lovely thought. Please stop with the your dad is a dog comments. It really grosses me out.
KK. Virgin. How is everything else?
I'm a virgin because you won't give it up.
I will, baby. You know I'm dying to. Wait till this is all cleared up.
I'm not visiting you in prison, BTW.
Not going to prison.
Whatever. What are you doing? In response, I get a picture of him and his brother sitting in my bedroom. Why?
Why what? Why are we in your room? Game's on.
You have a media room.
We like it here. Besides, E says your room is full of good luck.
I groan. Easton has gambling issues. A bookie once attacked us outside a club, and I had to pay him off. E betting on anything?
If he is, he's winning because he's not shitting a brick over the score. I'll watch over your little East, don't you worry.
Ha, thanks. I miss everyone. A knock sounds at the door.
Yeah?
I'm not happy at the interruption, and make no effort to keep the irritation out of my voice.
"It's Dinah," comes the equally irritated response. "We're ready to eat."
"I'm not eating," I call back. She laughs cruelly from behind the door.
"As you shouldn't. You could stand to lose a few pounds, but your father has requested your presence, princess."
I clench my teeth. "Fine, I'll be right out." Gotta go. Eating with Dinah and S. Smiley face. I push the suitcase out of the way and walk into the living room. A uniformed man is rolling a cart inside, while he carefully places everything on the large dining room table. Steve takes a seat at the head.
"Sit, sit."
He waves a hand, completely ignoring the nice man who is removing the silver domes from the plates.
"I ordered you a burger, Ella."
He sighs when I don't answer.
"Fine, don't eat it then."
"But I ordered it in case you'd changed your mind." The server lifts a silver dome off my plate to reveal a huge burger on a bed of lettuce. I give him an awkward smile and say, "Thanks," because he doesn't deserve my rudeness. It's useless, though, because he doesn't look at me at all. With a sigh of my own, I sit down. Dinah takes a chair on the opposite side of the table.
"This is nice," Steve announces.
He snaps a napkin and drapes it across his lap.
"Oh, hell, I forgot my drink on the coffee table. Will you get that for me, Dinah?"
She rises immediately, grabs the glass, and brings it over to Steve. He kisses her cheek.
"Thank you, darling."
"Of course." She resettles herself in her chair. I force my gaze to my plate so no one can see the astonishment. This is a completely different Dinah than the one I met before. Heck, it's a different Dinah than the one who just summoned me to dinner. I've only had two other encounters with her, and both of them were not good. She was confrontational at the will reading, and then at Callum's house, I caught her having sex with Gideon in the bathroom. Tonight, Dinah is quiet, almost shy, and it's like watching a coiled snake hiding under a big banana leaf. Oblivious, Steve takes a sip.
"It's warm."
There's a long moment of silence. When I drag my eyes away from the table, I see Steve staring pointedly at Dinah. She smiles thinly.
"Let me get you some ice."
"Thanks, dear."
He turns to me.
"Would you like some water?"
The interplay between these two is so weird that I forget I'm supposed to be giving him the silent treatment.
"Sure."
Rather than pour it himself, he calls out toward the kitchen area.
"Dinah, bring Ella a glass of water."
Then he begins cutting into his steak.
"I spoke with the DA's office this morning. We should be able to take possession of the apartment soon. That'll be nice for all of us."
"I'm pretty sure it will be nice for none of us." Dinah returns with two glasses, one full of ice, one full of water. She sets the water glass in front of me with enough force that some of the liquid splashes over the rim and soaks my sleeve.
"Oh, I'm sorry about that, princess,"
she says sweetly. Steve frowns.
"No prob," I mutter.
Steve drops a couple of ice cubes into his drink, swirls it around, and then takes a sip. Dinah has just picked up her fork when Steve makes a face.
"Too watery," he states.
She hesitates, her fingers growing white around the fork handle. I wonder if she's going to stab Steve with it. But instead, she sets it down in a slow, deliberate fashion. Pasting a smile on her face, she rises from the table for the third time and makes her way to the bar, where big bottles are lined up like little soldiers in a row. At this rate, I might start drinking from them.
"Ella, I spoke with your headmaster today," Steve tells me.
I tear my eyes away from Dinah's stiff back.
"Why would you do that?"
"I just wanted to check on your progress at Astor Park.
Berenger informed me that you have no extracurricular activities. He slants his head.
You mentioned you like dancing. Why not the school dance team?
I was working at the time. I don't feel like getting into my feud with Jordan. It sounds stupid saying it out loud.
Then perhaps the school newspaper.
I try not to grimace. Writing articles sounds more painful than sitting here at dinner. Actually, I take that back. This dinner is so uncomfortable that I'd rather be sparring with Jordan Carrington, so the school newspaper would be a welcome distraction. What did you do as electives? I counter. Maybe if I can get him to admit he was a slacker in high school, he'll ease up a little.
I played football, basketball, and baseball.
Great, one of those. But hadn't Callum implied that Steve wasn't interested in running a business and preferred just having fun? Why can't he let me enjoy myself? Maybe I'll try out for the, I think frantically of some girl sport, soccer team.
Steve smiles encouragingly. That would be good. We can talk to Berenger about it.
Ugh, I guess I can try out for it, and when they see how terrible I am, they'll kick me off the grounds and ask me to never return. It's not a bad plan, actually. I pick up my burger and take a bite, even though I'm not at all hungry. But it gives me something to do with my hands, and it keeps my mouth full, so I don't have to make any more conversation. As I chew, I think strategy for the best way to get around Steve. I need to pretend like I'm meeting his demands, while actually doing whatever the hell I want. Hanging out with Val, fooling around with Reed, and having fun with East and the twins. Besides, watching out for Reed and Easton is a full-time job. In the meantime, I can hunt down possible suspects. I think I might be the only one interested in finding the real criminal. By the time I've arranged this perfectly in my head, Dinah returns with Steve's latest drink. What did you do in high school? I ask her, trying to be polite. I worked two jobs to support my family. She smiles. Neither of which required me to take off my clothes. I cough mid-sip. Steve frowns again. Did you know that Ella was stripping when Callum found her? Dinah asks her husband. Her tone is sweeter than sugar. How unfortunate. As I recall, you've never had any problems taking your clothes off in public, he answers cheerfully, and nobody had to pay you to do it. That shuts her up. The hotel phone rings. Steve ignores it, and it rings and rings until finally Dinah gets up to answer. His gaze follows her all the way into the living room. When she turns her back on us, Steve shifts his attention to me.
You think I'm being mean to her, don't you? He murmurs.
Faced with a choice between lying or finding out what the hell is going on, I opt for truth. Yeah, kinda.
Well, try not to feel bad for her, he shrugs.
I think she intentionally messed with my equipment and tried to kill me. My mouth drops open. Speechless, I watch as he slices into his steak and takes a huge bite. After swallowing, he wipes his mouth and continues.
I can't prove it with the guide missing, but I can torment her. Don't worry. You're safe, Ella. It's me she can't stand.
Wrong. I still remember the threats she hurled at me when she found out I was heir to Steve's fortune. Besides, I've seen Discovery Channel specials on snakes. They're the most dangerous when they feel threatened. But I doubt Steve's going to listen to any of my warnings. He's going to do whatever it is he wants. But now, I have Dinah soaring to the top of my suspect list. Maybe moving in with them is a good idea. I can find not only Gideon's stuff, but evidence that she killed Brooke. Then common sense takes over. If the police, not to mention Callum's investigators, couldn't find anything that pointed to someone other than Reed, how am I supposed to? Despondently, I shove the lettuce around my plate. I don't think you should poke a bear. Why don't you just divorce her and move on?
Because Dinah always had a plan up her sleeve, and I want to see what it is. Besides, I don't have proof.
He reaches out a hand to touch mine.
And maybe it's foolish of me to bring you into this mess, but you're my daughter, and I don't want to miss another day of your life. I've missed too many before. I know you don't like the decisions I'm making, and hell, maybe they're all wrong. In my defense, I've never had a daughter before. Will you at least give me a chance? I sigh. It's pretty hard to be a bitch in the face of that.
I'll try, I tell him.
Thank you. That's all I ask.
He squeezes my hand before drawing back and resuming eating. A moment later, Dinah joins us at the table again.
It was the furniture store. The police aren't allowing them to deliver the new bed you ordered.
Dinah's face is red, and she sounds like she's choking on something. Steve leans toward me with a feral smile.
Dinah was using our current bed to screw someone who isn't her husband, so I'm having it replaced.
Wow. Just... wow.
He turns toward his wife. Have the building store it then, until we all move in.
With that statement, the rest of dinner is a stilted, awkward affair. Dinah goes off to relay Steve's instructions, and when she returns, she's ordered around shamelessly. She meekly obeys every command, but still manages to throw a cutting remark my way here and there. And every time Steve turns his head, she flashes me an evil smile, which goes a long way to proving my theory about not trusting snakes.
Mind if I go? I ask, once Steve puts away the last of his meal. There's only so much of this I can take. And after 30 minutes of it, I need a break. I've got homework.
Of course.
As I walk past his chair, he grabs my wrist and tugs me down to plant a kiss on my cheek.
I feel like we're really a family tonight, don't you?
No. But I can't diagnose what's going on inside me. The kiss on the cheek from my dad feels odd.
He's a stranger to me in all the ways that count, and the urge to escape rides me hard.
When I hurry into my room, the expensive leather suitcase tempts me. I could take it and leave. Be done with this weird family, and not have to face the emotions that Steve's existence brings out in me. But I just shove the suitcase into the closet, pull out my homework, and try to concentrate. Outside, I hear the television flick on and then off. The phone rings. There are other signs of life, but I'm not leaving this room. Finally, around 9, I yell that I'm going to bed. Steve wishes me a good night. Dinah doesn't. After brushing my teeth and slipping into one of Reed's old t-shirts, I climb into bed and call him. He answers after the second ring.
Hey, how's it going over there?
Bizarre.
How so?
Steve is awful to Dinah. He said he thinks she might have tampered with his equipment, so his revenge is to make her life hell. He's doing a good job of it.
Reed snorts, clearly not feeling any sympathy for Dinah. Ella, she's an original see you next Tuesday.
Ugh, don't use that word.
I didn't. I used several words, 4 of them. How you choose to interpret them is your business.
Dinner was so awkward, worse than the night Brooke announced her pregnancy.
Reed whistles. That bad, huh? Do you want me to come over? You said you had your own room.
I do, but we better not. Steve's so... I can't read him. I'm afraid of what he'd do if he caught you in here tonight.
All right. Say the word, though, and I'll be there.
I snuggle deeper under the covers. Do you think Dinah did it?
I'd like to pin it on her. But Dad's investigators say she was on an international flight from Paris when Brooke died.
Shoot. No motive, then. What about hiring someone, like Daniel hired someone to knife you?
I know.
He blows out a heavy breath. But there are three sets of surveillance cameras at the building. The lobby and elevator cameras show only me.
And the others?
The stairwell cameras show nothing. The third set are in the service elevators. Staff, movers, delivery people use those. They were down for maintenance that night, so there's nothing there.
My heart beats a little faster. So someone could have gone up the service elevator.
Yeah, but the DNA all points in my direction.
He sounds miserable.
And Dinah and Brooke were friends, so what's the motive? Brooke had a rough childhood, made friends with Dinah when they were teens. She and Dinah worked their way into a circle of rich men, hoping to land one of them. Dinah got lucky with Steve a couple years back, and Brooke set her sights on Dad, but he wasn't willing to put a ring on her finger.
Do you think your dad? I'm reluctant to say it, but Callum could have hired someone too.
No,
Reed says sharply.
No one in my family offed her.
Can we talk about something else?
Where are you?
I don't want to talk about anything else, but I give in because I've had too much conflict tonight. I'll never get to sleep at this rate. In my room? You?
I'm in yours.
I hear him inhale.
Smells like you.
You wearing my t-shirt? Yeah.
And?
I'm not having phone sex with you before actual sex, I reply tartly.
Aw, poor Ella. I'll make you feel good at school on Monday.
His low-voiced promise makes me tingle, but since Monday is a whole 48 hours away, there's no point to this conversation. I change the subject to the game, and we talk for a long time about nothing and everything, and just hearing his voice makes me feel better. Good night, Reed.
Night, baby. Don't forget about Monday.
He laughs quietly as he hangs up. Cursing him, I shove the phone on the nightstand and am about to turn off the light when the door swings open with no warning. What the hell? I shoot up and glare at Dinah, who's walking in as if she belongs here. I locked that. She waves her keycard in the air. These babies open any door in the suite. Oh my God, really? I'd noticed the keycard slot under the handle, but I thought only my card could open it.
Don't open this door again, I say coldly. If I want you to come in, I'll invite you in. Which will never happen,
because I'm never going to want her to come in, ever. She ignores that, tossing her long blonde hair over one shoulder. Let's get one thing straight, sweetie. It doesn't matter if we're in a hotel or in the penthouse. It's still my house. You're nothing but a guest here. I raise a brow. Isn't it Steve's house? Dinah scowls at me. I'm his wife. What's his is mine. And he's my father, who, by the way, left me everything after he died, not you. I smile sweetly. Remember? Her green eyes flash, making me regret taunting her. I'd wanted Steve not to poke a bear, and here I am doing the same thing. I guess I'm my father's daughter. Well, he's not dead anymore, is he? Her lips twist in a smug smile. So I guess you're back to having what you're used to. Nothing. I falter, because she's right. I didn't particularly care about all the money Steve left me in his will. But now that it's gone, I really do have nothing. No, that's not true. I have the $10,000 Callum gave me when I got back to Bayview after running away. I make a mental note to hide that cash the first chance I get. You have nothing, too, I point out. Steve controls everything around this place, and it doesn't look like he was too happy with you at dinner. What did you do to piss him off so hard? I pretend to think it over. I know. Maybe you killed Brooke. Her jaw drops in outrage. Watch your mouth, little girl. What? Did I hit a nerve? I narrow my eyes at her. Am I getting too close to the truth? You want the truth? Brooke was my best friend. That's the truth. I'd kill you before I'd ever kill her.
Besides, I've learned that accidents aren't the best way to get rid of people.
She smiles savagely. I have a gun, and I'm not afraid to use it.
I gape at her.
Did you just confess to trying to kill Steve?
Oh man, where's a recorder when you need it?
She lifts her chin, as if she's proud of her actions. Watch yourself, princess. When it comes to children, I'm a big believer in the saying, seen, but not heard.
As long as you stay out of my way, I'll stay out of yours.
I don't believe her, not for a hot second. She's going to get some serious pleasure out of tormenting me, now that I live under her roof.
And was that comment about the gun a threat?
Holy hell.
Watch yourself, Dinah says again, then flounces out of my room and closes the door behind her. I stay in bed. There's no point in getting up and locking the door when I know that any keycard can open the darn thing. Taking a breath, I shut off the light and close my eyes. Visions of Dinah flashing a gun in my face pop up, along with ones of Reed, behind bars. Sleep is elusive.
Don't lose your temper with S. Not worth it. He'll come around.
That's the text Reed sends me before he leaves for practice on Monday morning, and it's pretty much the same thing he's been saying to me this whole weekend. This whole long, terrible, long, frustrating, long weekend. Come around my ass. Steve has already gotten me fired from my job and decided I'm trying out for a school team. You'd think that would be enough, but nope, it's not. Last night, he informed me he was imposing a curfew. I have to be home by 10 each evening, and I have to turn on the location finder on my phone so he can keep tabs on me. I've already decided that in the future, I'll be leaving my phone at home. There's no way I'm making it easier for him to find me. The problem is, this Friday is the Riders' first playoffs game. Reed was cleared to play, and I desperately want to go because I've decided I'm done with Reed's reluctance. Every day that he's the prime suspect in Brooke's case is a day that rattles my sense of security. If we're supposed to act normally, if we're supposed to at least pretend that all is well in our lives, then this distance between us should not exist. It's time for us to have sex. I don't care if I have to play dirty to make that happen, so I'm going to seduce him. The away game is the perfect place to do it, and there's an amusement park 30 minutes away that a bunch of kids were talking about going to. The plan is, or was, to use that as an excuse to stay overnight. Except now, with Steve's stupid curfew, I don't know how I'll be able to swing it. Hopefully Val can help me figure it out today, but I'm going on that away trip, one way or another. I finish brushing my hair, tuck my shirt into my skirt, and grab my backpack. Out in the living room, Steve is lounging on the couch, paging through a newspaper. Doesn't he ever work? Dinah is at the dining table, sipping a flute of orange juice. Or maybe it's a mimosa, because I don't think people use fancy glasses for their OJ. She eyes me over the rim, a smirk forming on her pouty lips. That skirt is rather short for school, don't you think? The paper rustles as Steve lowers it. He frowns as he examines my uniform. I look down at my white shirt, open blue blazer, and ugly pleated skirt. This is my uniform. Dinah glances at her husband. I didn't realize the headmaster at Astor Park Prep encouraged his female students to dress like whores. My jaw drops. First of all, the skirt goes all the way down to my knees. Second of all, who says things like that? Steve continues to study my skirt. Then he slaps the paper down by his side and glares at me.
Go back to your room and change.
I glare right back. This is my uniform, I repeat. If you don't like it, take it up with Behringer. He points a finger at my legs.
You can wear pants. I'm certain that in this day and age, that's an option for a school uniform.
This is a stupid conversation, so I walk toward the door. I don't have pants. Well, actually I do, but those khaki monstrosities are ugly as hell. No matter that they have a $300 price tag. I'm not putting those things on my body.
Of course she has pants, Dinah says, laughing gleefully. But we all know why she chooses not to wear them. Easier access with a skirt.
Another frown slashes Steve's face. She's right, he tells me. I had my share of fun with girls in skirts. They're easy lays. Is that what you want to be? Easy, Ella.
Dinah titters.
I clutch the strap of my backpack and turn the doorknob. If I had a gun, maybe I'd shoot Dinah with it. I'm going to school, I say stiffly. I've already missed one entire day of classes, so you could drive around Bayview. I'm not going to be late because you have a problem with my school uniform. Steve stomps over and lays his palm on the door.
I'm trying to help you. Girls who put out are disposable. I don't want that for you.
I pull the door open with a sharp jerk. Girls who put out are girls who want to have sex. There's nothing immoral about that, or gross, or deviant. If I choose to have sex, then that's what's going to happen. It's my body.
Not while you live in my house,
he thunders, hurrying after me down the hall. Dinah's laughter follows us all the way to the elevator. I jab the down button, then I'll move.
And I'll have you hauled back here. Is that what you want?
At my silence, he sighs with frustration. In a softer tone, he says, I'm not trying to be a bad guy, Ella, but you're my daughter. What kind of dad would I be if I just let you run around and sleep with your boyfriend? My boyfriend is your best friend's son, I remind him. I will the elevator to arrive faster, but it seems to be climbing the 44 floors one excruciating second at a time.
I know. Why do you think I'm so anxious about you dating him? Callum's kids are wild. They're experienced. That's not what I want for you.
Being a little hypocritical here, aren't you?
Yes, he throws up his arms. I don't deny it. The last thing in the world I want for you is to date the guy I was in high school. I had no respect for girls. All I wanted was to get in their pants or under their skirts.
He throws a pointed gaze at my hemline. And once I had them, I moved on.
Reed's not like that.
Steve gives me a look of pity.
Honey, I told all the girls I wanted to have sex with that they were special. And the only ones for me, too. I've used all those lines before. I would have said anything to get a girl to say yes.
I open my mouth to protest. But Steve keeps talking.
And before you say that Reed is different, let me point out that I've known that boy for 18 years, and you've known him for a few months.
Who has the more informed perspective?
He's not like that, I insist. He's the one who's holding out on me, not the other way around.
Steve laughs abruptly.
Shaking his head, he says, Damn, that boy's got moves I hadn't even thought of. I'll give him that.
I blink in confusion.
Pretending to be reluctant and forcing you to make all the moves, he must be loving that.
He sobers up.
No, Ella. You're just going to have to take my word on this. Reed's been around the block so many times, there's probably a trench built from all his activity. There've got to be other nice boys at Astor for you to date. Why don't you find one, and we'll revisit this conversation?
I can't mask my astonishment. I don't work that way. I don't discard people like that. Reed is not disposable in my life. I'm not like you.
Let's see how long his affections last when he doesn't have access to you.
Don't be so easy, Ella.
It's not attractive.
If I'd been the child Steve pretends that I am, I would have shouted an insult back. One burns at the back of my throat. One says that he needs to stop measuring me by his own miserable stick. But I'm not going to get anywhere by confronting Steve. Thankfully, the elevator finally fucking arrives. I need to get to school, I inform him as I step inside the car.
Classes are over at 3:40. I expect you here by 4.
The elevator doors slide shut. A tension headache pounds at my temples as I speed out of the basement parking garage 3 minutes later. The relentless throb of frustration doesn't let up until I reach Astor Park. How ironic that the place I once hated now feels like a refuge.
Chapter 17. Read. Worst weekend of my life. No lie. I spent all of Saturday with Halston Greer going over the details of my case. My lawyer maintains that the DNA, my DNA, they found under Brooke's fingernails is the most damning piece of evidence the cops have. He admitted that my explanation about Brooke scratching me out of anger might not sway a jury if this goes to court, especially combined with the video surveillance. I can't even remember her scratching me. My memory of the event is her demanding money, me laughing at her, her swinging a hand toward my face and not connecting. She wobbled on her feet. I caught her and pushed her away. She must have grazed me then. Which makes all of this so much bullshit. I didn't kill that woman. Just because her fingernails didn't break any of my skin doesn't mean she didn't scratch me. I've offered to take a lie detector test, but Greer says that even if I pass with flying colors, polygraph results aren't admissible in court. And if I fail the thing, he warned that the police might find a way to leak those results to the press, who would crucify me. Sunday, I wallowed around the house missing Ella, and not because I want to bone her, like Steve thinks. I miss her company, her laughter, and her smart-ass taunts. Steve kept her busy all weekend, so we were only able to text and talk on the phone a couple of times. I hate that she's not living with us anymore. She belongs here. Even Dad agrees, but when I pushed him to talk to Steve about it, he shrugged and said, "He's your father, Reed. Let's just see how it goes." When Monday finally comes, I'm practically dying of anticipation. Even though I'm released to practice, Coach has me running no-contact drills only, and he says there's no guarantee I'm going to see playing time on Friday. He's still pissed at me about the fight with Ronnie last week. Speaking of Ronnie, the ass-at wanders over to the bench a few times to harass me, calling me killer under his breath so Coach can't hear. I don't give a crap what he thinks of me, though. The only opinions that matter belong to my family and Ella, and none of them believes I'm a killer. "You're going the wrong way," East says with a grin as we walk across the south lawn after practice. "Don't you have bio?" "I do, but I'm not going there." Ella just texted to meet her at her locker. It's in the junior wing of the school, the opposite direction of the senior buildings. "I've got somewhere to be," is all I say, and my brother waggles his eyebrows mischievously. "Gotcha. Tell little sis I said hi." We part ways at the front doors, East darting off to his first class while I march down the hall toward the junior locker banks. Several girls smile at me, but just as many frown. Furtive whispers tickle my back as I walk. I hear the word police, and someone else says father's girlfriend. Other guys might flush with embarrassment or cower in shame, but I don't care about any of these kids. My shoulders are straight and my head is held high as I brush past them. Ella's entire face lights up when she spots me. She launches herself at me, and I catch her easily, burying my face in her neck and breathing in her sweet scent. "Hey."
"Hey,"
she says with a smile.
"I missed you."
"Missed you too." A groan slips out. "You have no idea how much." Sympathy fills her eyes.
"Are you still upset about the meeting with the lawyer?"
"A little. But I don't want to talk about that right now. I want to do this." I kiss her, and she makes the hottest sound against my lips, kind of a whimper crossed with a happy moan. I slip her some tongue just so I can hear her make that noise again. She does, and my body tightens.
"Ahem."
A loud throat clearing has us breaking apart. I turn, nodding politely at the teacher standing behind us. "Ms. Wallace, morning."
"Good morning, Mr. Royal."
Her lips flatten in a severe line.
"Ms. Harper, I think it's time for you two to go to class."
I nod again and take Ella's hand. "On our way," I assure the frowning teacher. "I'm walking Ella there now." Ella and I hurry away from the locker, but I don't walk her to class like I said. Instead, I turn left at the end of the hall. Once we're out of Ms. Wallace's line of sight, I tug Ella into the first empty classroom I find. It's one of the junior music rooms, completely dark because the heavy gold drapes are drawn shut.
"What are we doing?"
Ella hisses, but she's laughing. "Finishing what we started back there," I reply, my hands already landing on her slim hips.
"One kiss wasn't enough."
"One anything is never enough with this girl. I don't know how I ever lived without her. I mean, I went out with other girls, slept with a few of them, but I've always been picky as hell. Nobody ever really held my interest for more than a week or two, sometimes not more than a day, an hour. Not Ella, though. She got under my skin the moment I met her, and she's still there, in my blood, in my heart. Our lips meet again, and this kiss is hotter than the first. Her tongue is in my mouth, and my hands are on her ass, and when she starts wiggling her lower body against my crotch, I lose all awareness of our surroundings. "Come here," I mutter, dragging her to the teacher's desk. She hops up, and I instantly move between the cradle of her thighs. Her legs wrap around my waist, and then we're rocking against each other. It's hot as hell. Even hotter because we're at school and I can hear footsteps thumping up and down the hall outside the door.
"We shouldn't be doing this here,"
she says breathlessly. "Probably not, but tell me to stop. I dare you." I'm not going to have sex with her, but I can't keep my hands off of her, and I know I can make her feel good. I'm totally putting her first, just not in the way her dad wants. Screw Steve, though. She laughs again. I slip my hand under her skirt and wink at her. Gotta love the easy access. That gets me a startled snicker. "What?" I ask with a frown. "Don't worry about it." She grins widely, then squeaks in pleasure when my fingers find her. Rather than push me away, she arches into my greedy hand. Her hands are equally greedy, undoing the buttons of my dress shirt.
"Need to touch you," she mumbles.
I'm not complaining. The feel of her small, warm palms on my bare chest sends a jolt of heat up my spine. We've never fooled around at school before, but Steve is making it really fucking hard to see each other outside of it. He hasn't let me come over to the hotel even once since he moved Ella out of the mansion. Our kisses get sloppier, more frantic. I slide a finger inside her and groan against her mouth. I want to get her off before class so she'll be thinking about me all day. Maybe I'll do it again at lunch, take her to the bathroom that Wade dubbed the hookup zone, and... The door flies open and light suddenly floods the room. Ella and I break apart, but not fast enough. The tall, gray-haired music teacher in the doorway gets an eyeful of my hand flying out from under Ella's skirt, of my half-open shirt, and our swollen lips. He sighs in disapproval, then snaps, "Fix yourselves up. You're going to see Barringer." Shit. The headmaster calls our parents. I'm fuming when Dad and Steve walk into the waiting room outside Barringer's office because, come on, since when does Barringer call in the big guns over a couple kids making out in school? It happens every other minute. Wade has sex here, for fuck's sake. It doesn't take long for understanding to dawn on me, though, because the first thing Steve does after he storms in is shake Barringer's hand and say, "Thank you for calling me. I feared something like this might happen." In the chair beside mine, Ella is beet red. She's clearly embarrassed, but there's fire in her eyes, too. Anger. Like me, she knows that Steve is responsible for this. He must have warned the faculty to keep an eye out for us. "Get up," Steve tells Ella. "You're coming home with me." She bursts out with an objection. "No! You can't take me out of school again. I'm not missing any more classes, Steve." His tone is like ice. "You had no problem missing class before. Francois says you were 10 minutes late for first period." Ella falls silent. Dad is unusually quiet, too. He's watching me with an indescribable expression. It doesn't look like disapproval or disappointment. I can't figure it out at all. "This kind of behavior is unacceptable," Steve fumes. "This is a place of learning." "Yes, it is," Barringer agrees coldly. "And I assure you, Mr. O'Halloran, these kinds of shenanigans won't be tolerated." My jaw drops. "Really? But letting Jordan Carrington duct tape a freshman to the front entrance is A-okay?" "Read," my father warns. I spin toward him. "What? You know I'm right. Jordan freaking assaulted another student, and he..." I rudely gesture at the headmaster. "Totally let it slide. Ella and I are caught making out like two normal teenagers and..." "Normal teenagers," Steve echoes with a harsh laugh. "You've got a plea hearing this week, Reed. You're facing a murder charge." Frustration shoots through me. Christ, I don't need the reminder. I'm well aware of how screwed I am right now. Then I register what he'd said. "What plea hearing?" I ask my dad. His features go strained. "We'll discuss it when you get home from school."
"You can discuss it on your way home," Barringer interjects. "Because I'm suspending Reed for 2 days.
"What the fuck?" I demand angrily.
"Language," the headmaster snaps. "And you heard me. 2-day suspension."
He glances at Steve. "Ella can remain at school if that's acceptable to you." After a long, tense moment, Steve nods. "It's acceptable. As long as he's not here, I'm all right with letting her stay."
Steve says he, like I'm a carrier for Ebola or some shit. I don't get it. I really don't. Steve and I never had any problems in the past. We weren't close, but there was no hostility between us. Now the air is so hostile I can hardly breathe.
Then it's settled.
Berenger walks around his desk. Mr. Royal, I'm releasing Reed into your custody. Ella, you may return to class. She hesitates, but when Steve offers a hard glare, she quickly moves to the door. Right before she walks out, she gives me the most miserable, frustrated look on the planet. I'm pretty sure I'm wearing the same expression. Once she's gone, Steve shifts his scowl to me.
Stay away from my daughter, Reed.
She's my girlfriend, I reply through clenched teeth.
Not anymore. I asked you to respect her, and when I thought you were going to do so, I was open to the idea of the two of you dating. After what happened this morning, I'm no longer on board with it.
He addresses my father.
Our kids just broke up, Callum. If I see or hear of them together again, you and I are going to have words.
Then he marches out of the office and slams the door behind him.
Chapter 18. Ella. For the second day in a row, I go to school angry. Yesterday, Steve and Dinah ganged up on me about my skirt. Today, Reed is suspended because Steve has some kind of parental stick up his ass. The single good thing about my anger at Steve is that I don't have the emotional energy to worry about Dinah any longer. I can't believe he ordered Berenger to tell all the teachers to narc on us. That is so not cool. I'm still fuming about it as I pull into the parking lot. Luckily, I spot Val on the front lawn, which distracts me from my rage. Hey, sexy, I shout out my window. Her dark bob spins around, her middle finger ready. When she realizes it's me, she jogs over. Hey, I was worried about you. Did you have to deal with the never-ending lecture when you got home from school yesterday? I maneuver into an empty parking space, then turn off the car. You have no idea. She already knows about yesterday's stupidity, because I spent the entire lunch period bitching about it. Then I wrapped it up by griping and moaning for a good 10 minutes about how I won't be able to go to the away game and seduce Reed, and have sex for the first time. What happened? Val asks, as I grab my backpack and hop out of the driver's seat. There was a lot of arguing, shouting, insults thrown. It ended with Steve telling me that I needed to stop being so easy, that guys didn't find it attractive. Val grimaces. Wow, that's harsh. It's getting so bad, I'm actually thinking I need to spend more time at school. It can't be that bad, she says, knowing my great aversion to joining anything here at Astor. It just seems bad, because you're not used to having a parent who imposes rules and stuff. From what you've told me, your mom was the kid in your household, and Callum kind of lets his boys do anything they want, as long as they don't make too big of a mess. So you're saying that Steve's behavior is normal? I challenge. Val shrugs. It's not that abnormal. I think your mom and Callum are more lenient than other parents. You have parties at your house, and you don't have a curfew. She laughs. Well, sure I do. I have to be home by 10 on school nights and midnight on the weekends unless I tell Uncle Mark or Aunt Kathy first. And I wouldn't be allowed to have a boy spend the night. It was easy to fool around with Tam because he lived in the same house. Tam is the Carrington's housekeeper's son. I think most parents don't allow boys to sleep over. I mean, why do you think Wade has so much sex at school? His mom is kind of strict at home. She pats me on the shoulder. Steve might be going overboard, but it just means that he cares. Don't take it personally. Is she right? I mean, I have almost no experience with normal parents, but here's Valerie, who I presume does, telling me that Steve's reaction is, well, ordinary. Am I overreacting? Maybe. But still, I don't see myself ever being okay with all these rules and shit. Even if that's normal, I don't want to live like that, I admit, as we walk into the building. Ride it out, she recommends. You're both so new at this. You're a kid, and Steve's trying to be the adult. You're bound to have clashes. I bet you'll figure something out. I'm not a kid. I'm 17.
Ha, that's where you're wrong. My mom always says that no matter how old I get, I'll always be her baby. That's just how parents are. She nudges my shoulder with hers. Honestly, I think it's pretty cool that he came back from the dead. You're not alone anymore. The thing is, I didn't feel alone before Steve came along. And that's the piece that's missing for me. He's not filling something inside of me that was empty. The Royals were already there. And Steve's trying to push someone out to make room for himself. Val must read the skepticism on my face. Don't break your head obsessing about this. You should go to him with a counteroffer. What do you mean? Steve doesn't want you hanging around with Reed because why? He says Reed's a dog. Val tips her head back and stares at the sky as if praying for patience. Honey, Steve is totally being a dad. I feel the need to defend Reed again. It seems like I'm always defending him. Maybe Reed was a dog before, but he's not with me. Besides, he's not like Easton. He doesn't sleep around. He's picky. Val opens her mouth to respond, but before she gets anything out, the bell rings. Hold that thought. Meet me in the south bathroom at lunch. We'll talk more. The south bathroom? I have no idea what she's talking about. It's the one by the boys' locker room. Wade always does his business there. With that, she's gone, leaving me to wonder if I'm the unreasonable one. The moment the lunch bell rings, I make a stop at my locker to shove my books inside, then hurry toward the south bathroom. It takes me about 10 minutes to find it, because this school is so ridiculously big. Pushing open the door, I stop abruptly at the sight of the full bathroom. There are about 6 girls in here. Val's putting on lipstick in front of the far sink, and I quickly make my way to her. Why is it so crowded? I hiss under my breath. I thought Wade has sex in here. In the boys' room? She smacks her cherry red lips together. This is the girls' bathroom. Right. Duh. For some reason I thought we were having a private powwow. Dance team is having extra rehearsals for the away game performance. Apparently Gibson High is their main rival in state dance competitions. Val explains, tucking the lipstick into her purse. Anyway, I've been giving this some thought, and I think what you need to do is go to Callum. Have Callum work it on your behalf. I don't think that's going to make a difference. Callum already told Steve that I should live with the Royals, and Steve gave him the look of death and dragged me out by my hair. Val's mouth twitches. By your hair? Okay, maybe not by my hair, but it felt like it. I was just kidding. I like seeing you get all angsty over hooking up with Reed. Sometimes you come off so together, it's intimidating. She pauses. What's Steve's weakness? I meet her reflection in the mirror. What do you mean? When I want something for my aunt, she likes to see a sacrifice. So let's say I want to go to a concert. I'll tell her I'm studying super hard, doing extra work around the house, essentially laying the groundwork for what a fucking awesome kid I am, and then I'll ask for the concert tickets. Does she know you're manipulating her? I ask. Of course. It's our game. She gets to see me being responsible, and that gives her warm fuzzies, and then I'm rewarded for my sacrifice. My dad likes it when I write a paper justifying all the reasons I want something. Some girl next to me chimes in. I glare at her in the mirror, but she's unfazed. Or maybe she can't tell I'm glaring because she's busy putting on mascara. My mom needs to hear it's okay from 10 other moms before she says yes, another girl near the door says. I flick an irritated gaze toward Val at how all these girls are up in my business. She merely smiles, mischief glinting in her eyes. What do you want? The girl by the door asks. I think her name is Haley. The blonde next to me grins. She wants Reed, right? My first reaction is pure discomfort. I don't like discussing my personal issues with strangers, but the 2 girls actually look friendly. So I sigh and lean against the sink. I want to go to the away game, but my... It's hard saying the word, but I spit it out. My father won't let me. He's being overprotective, the blonde guesses. Making up for lost time, probably, Haley suggests. Oh, right!
the blonde exclaims. Your dad's Steve O'Halloran. I forgot about his grand resurrection. Val snickers. Yeah, he's definitely making up for lost time, Blondie agrees. Val leans around me. See? She pokes me lightly. This is all normal. It totally is, Haley agrees. My dad freaked out when he found a condom in my car. My mom took me to the clinic the next day and put me on birth control. She told me to hide that shit and be more careful next time. But it's your body, I point out. She sidles over. Your dad is going to want to control you until you're 50. My oldest sister is 26, has a law degree, and when she came home for Christmas with her boyfriend, my parents made him sleep in the basement. Dads are the worst when it comes to sex. Ella doesn't have a mom to run interference, Blondie reminds everyone. I shift awkwardly again. It's so messed up that everyone at this school knows my business. Haley taps her chin. Doesn't Katie Pruitt live with only her dad? Yeah, she does, a curly-haired brunette says as she leans against the door of the fourth stall. And she's totally having sex with Colin Trenthorne. They've been doing it since she was a soph. Does her dad know? I think he pretends he doesn't know, but she's on birth control, so he has to have some idea. My mom told my dad that my birth control was for my period, Haley says. So maybe Katie used that excuse, too. I don't need an excuse to go on birth control, I tell them. I've been on it since I was 15. Because I actually did have terrible cramps, not just because my mother was worried about the pregnancy thing. I need an excuse to get out of town overnight. Say you're staying with a friend. And hide in the car while the game's going on? That's not gonna work, Val says impatiently. Everyone knows the Royals, and someone is bound to mention that they saw Ella at the game. A sympathetic murmur spreads through the bathroom. Not to mention that Callum will definitely be there and probably rat me out to Steve, I remind them. I'm not sure why I'm suddenly okay with all of these girls offering me advice, but I am. It feels weirdly welcoming in some way. Before anyone can come up with a workable solution, the bell rings. Everyone's heads pop up, and there's a flurry of activity as the girls jostle each other to get their makeup reapplied and their stuff packed away. We'll think of something, Haley says on her way out. About 6 girls stream out after her, all of them waving goodbye to me. That was... I trail off, my confused eyes focusing on Val. Fun? Helpful? Entertaining? She grins. Not everyone here is awful. Besides, now you know, Steve's behavior is completely normal. You just need to figure out how to work him. A little dazed, all I can do is nod. Okay, then, I guess he is being normal. I tell my parents what they want to hear, and then do my own thing. A familiar voice offers coolly. I spin around to see Jordan stepping out of a stall. Did you crawl out of the sewer, or have you been there the whole time? I accuse. Eavesdropping the whole time, she says blithely. So, you want to have a little sexcation with Reed Royal, hmm? I don't answer her right away. This girl has disliked me from the moment I stepped foot onto Astor Park's hallowed prep school grounds. When I was ordered to try out for the dance team, she left me a stripper's uniform. I'm sure she meant for me to be too embarrassed to come out of the locker room, but I put on the gear, marched into the gym, and punched her in the face. Maybe, I finally say. So you need my help. She nudges Val out of the way and passes her hands under the automatic soap dispenser. No, I came to Val for help. Jordan scrubs her hands clean, shakes the excess water off, and then grabs a paper towel from the stack in the basket next to the sink. And Val's here, and so are 6 of my teammates, but you haven't come up with a solution, she says smugly. Meanwhile, I have the perfect one. I doubt it, but her confident tone keeps my feet glued to the floor. Why would you help me? I watch her with narrowed eyes, but I can't read anything on her face. Damn, she'd be an impressive poker opponent. She tosses the towel in the trash. Because you'd owe me. Owe her? That sounds miserable. But what if she really does have a solution to my problem? What would you want in return? I ask suspiciously. A favor to be paid later. She pulls out a little